The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. We have both advanced to Friday.
Yeah, I actually tweeted out yesterday, and some of our listeners, they agreed that if I called in sick,
they wouldn't tell on
you. They wouldn't tell you why.
Each one of them instantly did a screenshot and private messaged me right away, right after.
Where's the
loyalty?
Well, it was.
It's right here.
It was probably 4:30, and there were so many close games going on, and I'm trying to get to sleep.
Oh man, I was already asleep by then.
And it was just for me and impossible. Mm. And I will say every Thursday of the first Thursday of the tournament, I always say to myself, why am I working tonight?
Right. Yeah. Why am I here?
It was a good day of basketball, though. I had Marquette lost, which was, they were ranked. They were in the top, I think, 12.
Hmm.
So, they lost. There were some.
Any surprises? I didn't catch any of it at all.
Yeah, so. Marquette losing probably was the big one of the of the day, because I think they were ranked, I think they were ranked somewhere between 10 and 14 in the nation, and they got upset. So
yeah, so I got it. This you and I off the air yesterday. I asked, because aside from the NCAA, there are teams that didn't make it and they went to the NIT, and I thought, okay, an NCAA ticket, if it's, if one of the games is in your town, especially if you're following, one of the teams, then you would, you'd want to go, right? It's a big draw. And then I asked, well, what about for these NIT, even some of the more known schools,
right,
what's the draw?
The NCAA doesn't work that way. You odds are you never play in your town or anywhere near you. Well, you may play within a few hundred miles.
No, that's not what I said. Not from the hometown. But if there's a game in your town and you follow one of the two teams, like you go into Tulsa, if it's close enough, you'd want to.
Right,
go.
I was thinking of going to Tulsa. Right.
The NIT, I wondered, I said, is it different? And as soon as I got home, there was an article about Alabama. And their NIT game the other night, and they lost by 1 point. And they said the good news is there was no one there to see it. In their Coliseum holds 15,000. There were 2,500 people there. And I thought, well, there's the answer for at least one team.
Well, because when you're a top major college program, there are expectations. Mm-hmm. I went to an NIT game one time, and this is when the coach now of Michigan and
right.
It was close a little bit, but then Michigan won pretty handily yesterday. John Beilein, who is the coach of Michigan now, was the coach of Canisius, and they made the NIT, and they had a home game, and the Canisius auditorium probably only holds about 2,500. Mm-hmm. So they moved it to the big arena. There was like 14,000 people there. Mm-hmm. But again, you're talking about a team that had hardly ever made a tournament.
Yeah, and that was my question, right, for some of these teams that were on the bubble, as they said, and then, and didn't make the NCAA and went on.
Well, Bowling Green, I know, mm-hmm. That had won 23 games, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I just read yesterday, when they didn't make the NCAA, mm-hmm. when they didn't win their tournament, they just said, nope, we don't want to be in any other tournament. Don't invite us.
Wow.
They just said, don't invite us. This is the only one we wanted to go to.
Hmm.
And they took criticism for it, but they had high expectations this year. So it was, I think it's what your expectations are.
Yeah.
I wonder if would a Duke play in the NIT?
Right.
And would anybody show up if Duke played in the NIT? Because the expectations are so great. If you don't, remember, I believe I'm doing this number from memory. I believe there are 353 teams in Division I college basketball. So 353 teams have a possibility of making, you know, the final 68. And getting into the tournament, which means the vast majority do not.
Right.
It's not like the National Hockey League. What do they have? I forgot how many teams the National Hockey League has. 30, 32. And I think out of the 30 or whatever they have, let's say they have 30 teams. Out of the NHL, they have 30 teams and 43 make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
they
still,
bring in teams.
But still, Buffalo doesn't.
Yeah. Sabres are out. In the offseason, Sabres are out of it. What do you mean? What are you talking about? No, they're out of it. They're out of it. They're done.
So, but there are teams that, you know, that have just the expectations, you know, the Dukes, the North Carolinas, the Virginias, the Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. There's expectations, but, for a lot of the teams, just to make the NCAA, there's a couple teams that I think made it for the first time in, you know, 20 years, 30 years that make it. And so even if they make the NIT, they're going to go. I don't know what the cash layout is for that, though, because a lot of it is expense for the college,
right,
too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you make the NCAA, well, you're getting a because you did that, you're making a cut, I'm sure, of the huge television. Not the number of people that might actually be there in the arena, but the huge television deal that the NCAA has.
Right.
You get a you get a nice sum of money to do that. So
right. Yeah. But I thought it was funny because I'd asked that question and that article just popped up as a point of interest on my phone yesterday. It will be I'm sure a full weekend. Now, we're supposed to have like rain all day Saturday, so that'll be a good day. To not do anything but watch TV. Supposed to have rain.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, we'll be and work around the house because all the spring stuff now has to be done.
Yeah, I'm traveling. I'm gonna be on the road.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I won't be. Hey, we got a good show.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, guess what? We don't know the First Amendment, the Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
New survey out there again, which gets me to thinking that the longer that I'm in talk radio, the less we debate anything anymore. You know, it's sort of like yesterday, the one call that we had from New York.
Hmm.
The guy who called on gun control.
Yeah.
And said nobody in New York can be trusted with a, you know, with
he apparently doesn't like anybody in New York,
right,
so he doesn't want them having.
Right. Now, here's some Jersey.
He's from Jersey.
He was from Jersey, but he didn't trust anybody from. Nobody could be trusted. Right. To have a gun, and when we started telling him the way that it is in the United States,
because I said I said how does that affect my rights?
Right, and he said, well, you guys, you're in Texas, you know, you're from Texas, and I said, well, actually, no, I'm originally from New York, and you said I'm from America, and that's when he said, what? That's your excuse?
That's what everybody always says,
right? Well, and we had to remind him as we know, New York is still a part of the United States, and so is Texas.
Because we were talking about constitutional rights.
Right. So the Constitution, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Third Amendment, all of the amendments, I guess I don't have to go by numbers.
No.
And all of the Bill of Rights apply to everyone. There is no difference whether you live in Texas or whether you live in New York. The fact that we had to explain that shows you how impossible it is to have any kind of debate. We don't have debates these days. We simply correct people that are ignorant. Yeah. That's what we do as talk show hosts now.
Right. Yeah, that's it. That's all we do.
You and I have had the discussion, you know, think about it this week about, well, the entire Electoral College is ruining our democracy. Well, if we were a democracy and a pure democracy, you would be right, but we're not. We're a republic. So then you have to start and explain to people the system in which they live under because they are completely and totally clueless.
Yeah. It's how do you trust any polls anymore? How do you trust any polls? Here's what you would have to do, honestly, in my opinion. If you're a pollster and you really wanted to gauge something. Now, I know that there are people that are willfully ignorant that still vote. I get that. I know that. It's not required that you pass a test to go vote, unfortunately. But the whole point is that how do you really know if you're getting, yeah, it's their opinion, but what good is it if it's not a truly informed opinion? And I mean on the basics. I'm not talking about requiring them to go to law school or pass the bar or become a constitutional expert. Just the basics. Just a series of questions. Because if I were a pollster, it would be, okay, you got to answer these questions, then you can take the poll. If you fail, you can't take the poll. No poll for you. But it's because I think that if you and I came in and there were a breaking story, and it does happen sometimes, we can't really form an opinion. We can only form the opinion based on what we know, but we always leave it open because there's often a lot more facts that are coming in that may change our opinion. So we're not about being the first, whether it's reporting breaking news or forming an opinion on any story. We comment on things in the news and ideas. On the ideas, we know how we feel. We know exactly what, because there are no real new ideas. It's the same ideas being
right.
Again and again. Which on for our discussion, the greatest ideas came from our founding fathers. But the point being, you should have the basics down. You should be able to at least answer a few basic questions. Then you'll know if how people really feel about it. How often is it? Should there be the Green New Deal? Support the Green New Deal? Oh, yeah, it sounds great. Okay, here's what it would cost. Oh, that doesn't sound so great. You support Medicare for All? Yes, here's what it would cost. Here's what it would require in taxation. Oh, maybe not so much. You know, we see that time and time again. I think that one interview, the interviewer in the Walmart parking lot saying, hey, you think Walmart workers should earn more per hour? Oh, yeah. We're taking up a collection to give them more money. No. And so when you start this educational, just a basic educational process, then you start getting the real opinions. And I'm just wondering if you can, if you can trust polls. There are certain polls that will tell you, regardless of the cluelessness or the ignorance involved, they will tell you how people are going to vote, for the most part. Some pollsters are pretty good at that. But I mean on the issues, on the ideas. How do we really know if people aren't educated, and many of them don't care to educate themselves?
Well, the perfect thing was people have no idea. The ignorance on the Electoral College, the ignorance on why we are a republic, the ignorance across the board, and not only the ignorance, but the confidence in the arguments against being a republic that are so surface level and superficial that it's almost an embarrassment.
Yeah, right.
That they have no idea what they're talking about at all. None. Mm-hmm. They have no idea why we were set up as a republic. And the reason that overwhelmingly the support for a republic has held steadfast over the years has been because the liberals, especially the old-time liberals, understood that the reason that we are a republic is to protect the minority from the majority.
Right. To protect individual rights, to protect...
From the tyranny of the majority, where you don't live in a society where 51% can tell the other 49% what they should do.
Right.
That the 51% can't take away the rights of the other 49%. That's why we exist, in order to stop the tyranny, to ensure that there is not a tyranny of the majority against the minority. It is the protection of individual rights. And they have no idea. The left has no idea. They sit there and they proudly espouse their complete ignorance of the system that we live under.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We got a good show ahead.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, got this from Joe. Don't knock hockey. He has a hockey website.
Okay.
Or he's a hockey email. Excuse me. It's a hockey is in his emails.
So. Well, we love hockey, but just let's pare it down.
By the way, I did understand that all the teams, or more teams than are in the league, I understand that they really don't make the playoffs. That was just sarcasm, in case you didn't understand.
Yeah, and my little line about, they actually bring in more teams from other parts of the world. We're just joking.
Right. Yes,
I mean, we both know what it's like, because both of our teams have had Stanley Cup wins, right?
And I played hockey the majority of my life and was a pretty darn good goalie.
The Sabres have had a Stanley Cup win, right?
Because I couldn't skate. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. So we'll get to that ignorance topic coming up here in just a little bit. Also, no more indictments expected, as it seems like everybody is in the media is trying to make it sound like that later on today the Mueller report or Mueller investigation will be done.
Yeah,
we'll get to that coming up here in a little bit. The president blames the Fed for holding back economic growth in 2018. The NFL paid cap under $10 million. They say if he would have kept the lawsuit going, many lawyers believe he could have gotten more. But he settled.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. New info on the Clinton email investigation. AOC to find time for her constituents. That was a story
out
there.
How nice of her.
Joe Biden leads 2020 Democratic millennial support. And Trump and his support for Israel. That and more all coming up.
For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
A coastal low pulling offshore in the east will continue to cause rain showers today from New York City into Boston. As you get a little further inland, from the southern Appalachian Mountains up through the Laurel Highlands of Maryland, you're going to pick up a little light snow. Mixed precip also includes portions of the PA Turnpike, especially in and around Allentown, and then up towards Lake Erie into upstate New York, and then on into Maine. So a narrow band of potentially mixed precip associated with that system. We'll also see some lake effect snow in portions of Michigan. For the desert southwest, a low pressure area provides rain showers for southern New Mexico and western Texas. We'll also see some snow flurries in the higher elevations of the central Rockies. That'll extend over to Nevada. Some onshore rain for northern California and southern Oregon. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90 Red Eye.
The Vona Show.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Breaking news out of San Antonio. Did you see it?
What?
The San Antonio City Council voted yesterday, must have been last night, against allowing the opening of a Chick-fil-A concession at the city's airport. No Chick-fil-A at the San Antonio airport. Is there any reason to go to San Antonio anymore?
Yeah, but not the airport. I can drive. I always drive.
The Chick-fil-A restaurant was part of the plan from the corporation that operates stores in airports and hotels throughout the U.S. and Canada. And they wanted a Chick-fil-A that was part of the plan. And the city council said, nope, no Chick-fil-A.
And why? What reason did they give?
Well, apparently because the owner, the whole marriage equality thing.
Okay.
Back from a few years ago.
Yeah. I've noticed that other venues said, we don't want to go with Chick-fil-A because we need them to be open on Sunday. We've got, you know, we want vendors here that can serve people 7 days a week. So, and Chick-fil-A won't do that. Not a big airport there in San Antonio. Not huge. So, I don't know that actually I've ever flown into San Antonio or out of San Antonio.
No Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I'm just so disappointed.
Are you?
Yes.
You know they have Chick-fil-A in other locations.
The activists have won again.
Have they? I think it's a win for Chick-fil-A. When you make a choice like that, because if you think about the idea of having any vendor, right, big name brand vendor in a location like an airport, you're looking to serve customers. You're looking to draw people. If you've ever been at a Chick-fil-A at lunchtime, you don't have any question.
It's unbelievably mob. Yeah.
There's no question.
Remember when they opened in New York City?
Yeah, right.
The left was going nuts. It's like remember how long the line was?
Well, it's, you know, because sometimes I'm running errands and I have to be careful because at around lunchtime, around 12, you get hungry, you want to hit a drive-thru. Well, most all of them are crowded, but man, Chick-fil-A is crazy crowded. I don't know how they do the trafficking. They must have traffic lights. They certainly need them, but it's around the corner. Breakfast quite often too, but the line moves pretty quickly.
The drive-in, they have two drive-ins.
Yeah.
At the Chick-fil-A near me, and at lunchtime they actually put extra staff out there.
Yeah.
With iPads.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much throughout the day.
So they can
take your order right there.
They take your order right there.
They walk back in the line and take your order right there. Yep. It moves pretty quickly. Yeah, they've definitely got it down. Customer service is their thing.
It really is. Yeah. So.
And so, you know, it's a win for Chick-fil-A because in terms of any kind of culture war statement being made. But at the end of it, what are you trying to do? You're trying to serve your customer base at an airport. Is Chick-fil-A a huge draw? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at airports, it's not that you're going to decide to use that airport because of Chick-fil-A, but you are definitely the people that run the airport are talking about the amenities. They're all the time they're promoting the amenities. It was a big deal here.
I'm never going to San Antonio.
Yeah,
never.
Right. I haven't. I've
no
never
Chick-fil-A,
flown in.
I'm not
I guess
going.
I've never had a need to fly in. But the DFW airport. Announced they're putting a Whataburger in. That's a huge deal. For those out west, that's the In-N-Out of our state. That's the In-N-Out Burger. Although we do have In-N-Out Burger now. But, you know, that's their That's their loss, frankly.
I did see another news in Texas. So what was it, the legislature? I'm doing this from memory now. It just popped into my head that the legislature did allow a special exemption to the law where lemonade stands for kids on residential streets will be allowed.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank goodness.
Losing Chick-fil-A at San Antonio. No Chick-fil-A at the San Antonio airport, but lemonade stands are safe in Texas for kids.
Well, now the the SWAT teams can focus on other things instead of taking down a lemonade stand. It has become, and really, the left can decide these things, but ultimately they decide against American values. They think mm-hmm. they're doing the right thing. They think they're making a statement and that they're winning, that this is some kind of civil rights issue. It is not. It's not a civil rights issue at all. And the American people, by and large, don't support that kind of activity. Even if they agree with you or disagree with the owners of Chick-fil-A or the founders of Chick-fil-A, the company that runs Chick-fil-A, even if they disagree mm-hmm. with that company, what have we seen? I think when you see liberals coming out going, okay, it's going a little too far, not just on this issue, but the Ted Koppel on Trump in the media on Trump, other liberals coming out going, yeah, Ocasio-Cortez, that's a little too much. Omar getting challenged by Democrats. When you talk about the battle of the left right now, the cultural battle on all fronts, they're losing it.
Well, and you and I have talked, to expand this topic out and to go where we were last hour. When you look at, and we have, when you do this for a living, it's really noticeable. When you've done it as long as I've done it or you have done it, it is amazing that debate is gone. Mm-hmm. When we really got into this, even as recently as, even during the Obama administration, people would actually debate or attempt to debate from the left.
Mm-hmm.
There is no debate anymore. You would agree on the facts and then you would debate.
Right. Yeah.
There is no agreement on the facts. But I had said this yesterday and said this before. What are American values? When you say American values, when we say what is it that unifies us together, it is the Constitution of the United States. Mm-hmm. We now have a major political party that rejects all the major components of the Constitution of the United States. They don't believe in freedom of religion. They don't believe in freedom of speech. They can't even tell you what the five freedoms are, the five rights within the First Amendment of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. They don't believe in the Republic. All of a sudden, everybody on the left the last couple of weeks believes that we're a pure democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have seen it. First, they want the Electoral College to go. Then we talked about the left when all of a sudden started coming out. Well, wait a minute. If the Electoral College has to go, the Senate has to go.
Yeah.
And we said, see, here it goes. If you don't believe in the Constitution of the United States, if you don't believe in freedom of press, if you don't believe in, if you don't believe in free speech, if you don't believe in freedom of religion, if you don't believe in the Second Amendment, if you don't even have any idea what the three branches of government are, if you don't even understand why we have the Electoral College or why we have the Senate, if you are completely clueless as to the society that you live in, and when we say we have these common values and you have no idea what the common values are, then please tell me what an American is. What is an American? A geographical area that you live in? Or the belief in a constitution? Not even a belief, but an understanding of the rules and the ultimate law that make up the society that you live in. You would think that that would be the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
How can we ever have a debate with the other side when they have no idea? We're talking about the system and the rules and the laws and the culture and everything that comes out of the Constitution of the United States. They reject it all. Where's our common ground? Where are we all going to come together?
Well, and that's it. Every time you hear that from the left, what are they saying? You essentially need to agree with us. You need to come over to our side.
But their side is what? Is their side debating? The left used to talk about free speech. The left used to defend free speech. Now they try to restrict free speech in every way. You know, I thought about the whole, you know, McCain debate, you know, the whole thing going back and forth this week and the anger. And you know, one of the things that I always wanted and never got a chance to ask him, but I always wanted to ask him. And it was a serious question. It was not to demean him in any way. But remember, it was McCain-Feingold that the U.S., you know, that the Supreme Court found unconstitutional. It was like, look, you can't tell groups of people who band together, you can't restrict their free speech. You can't treat them differently. You can't say because you band together as a group and you use money to put out your message that you must be restricted. I mean, it's a pretty simple concept, but somehow McCain bought into the fact, and I always wanted to ask him a question. Look, you fought. You were a prisoner of war for years. You underwent torture. You wouldn't give in to the enemy. How could you so easily say, I want to restrict freedom of speech from those groups over there, but you can have it over here?
Right.
I know what he's going to say. Well, because money has... I remember because I never interviewed him, but I did interview Feingold, and boy, he was angry when you asked those specific questions. He got arrogant as all heck. He didn't want to hear anything that, well, number one, he couldn't defend, because that's the point that we brought up. I was working in Portland. I'll never forget, because if anybody knows the great talk show host Lars Larson out of Portland, Oregon, who's syndicated, he was in that conversation. And I was just livid at, you know, because he was just getting arrogant and getting angry. Not Lars, but Russ Feingold at the time. And it was like, you know, who are you? Who are you to be telling people who has freedom of speech or not? Well, you know, companies, if they're Americans that own a company, they have, even if you hate their speech, that's what freedom of speech is about. And I always wanted to ask that McCain that question, not in a demeaning way, but in the way, look, you made almost a sacrifice to this country that nobody has ever made. If anybody could understand the restriction of freedom of speech and rights, it would be you. Why did you so easily go down that path? And nobody ever directly asked him that question. And as we said before, look, I think it's got petty from Trump's point of view. We had a woman call up a couple weeks ago and said, McCain's a traitor. McCain wasn't a traitor. It was ridiculous. McCain made a sacrifice that probably the majority of us in this country couldn't have handled, the torture that he went through. Doesn't mean that he wasn't absolutely wrong. Doesn't mean that he didn't get bitter in his own age or in his older age. Didn't mean that he hated Trump. Because of course he did. It was obvious that he did. But on that note, when we talk about the things he did, whether it was Obamacare, you can sit there and say it was immoral. I can tell you a ton of things that politicians do that are immoral. Most Republicans and Democrats are absolutely immoral because they have no problem putting what we want today on future generations and having taxation without representation. So if you want to go down, you know, on people that aren't even born yet, if you want to go down the road of who's doing immoral and evil things, I can tell you the majority in Washington just ignore that fact. So let's set that apart right away. But I always wanted to ask Matt McCain that question. How could you have made almost the ultimate sacrifice, which would be your life, but at some time, the hell that he went through, how could you not care about the First Amendment? Because that's how it came across to me. And I'm saying that not in an insulting way, but a genuine way of caring about the First Amendment and knowing the impact that he had as a war hero for not seemingly to care about it.
Well, and then you expand that out, and the left has been very vocal about money in politics, and then they brag about Beto raising $6.1 million in
right.
his first day.
Right.
Which is it?
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. By the way, it's a Friday show. If you want to get in, we'd love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE. We've probably been opinionated this hour.
What? How did that happen?
That's what we do, but if you want to get in, we'd love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. Well, all right. I'm plagiarizing Ben Shapiro here.
We can do that. Trump? Our company, you know, and his company, you know.
We're the same company.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Trump backs Israeli sovereignty over Golan Heights. Good Trump. Trump blames Fed for holding back economic growth. Bad Trump.
Thank you, Ben, for allowing us to borrow your methodology in assessing the president.
Well, it's as we talked about, the continuing worry in the White House about where the economy is going.
Yeah.
And we've talked about it based on the numbers. Based on what the Fed is saying. The Fed, we didn't even get to this yesterday, did we? The Fed promoting 2.1% growth now for this year, which is basically Obama level growth.
And they may not change rates at all right. this year.
And the president talking about last year's growth should have been 4%, but the Fed held it back by raising rates. That's ridiculous. What is it now? Close to 2% base rate growth?
Yeah.
Or base interest rates?
Right.
That's not holding back any type of growth whatsoever. We've had massive growth in this country when the base rate has been much, much higher than that. So it's ridiculous. I know the president's looking for an excuse, but it's ridiculous. The Fed rates are not the reason that economic growth did not hit 4%. Number one, it's tough to get to a consistent 4% anyway. You can get it for a quarter. To get it for a year with as large as our economy is tough. Number one, to get to, the president has talked about 5% growth before. We have said, look, we would love it. If you could get consistent 3.1, 3.2%, that would be just incredible growth for this country. So 2.9% that we got last year is indicative of, I believe, the tax policies. But what's happening now, I believe, is a direct result of the tariffs. There was quite a bit yesterday about the fact that, look, from the economic models showing the president the growth that we've had, the president wins in a landslide in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And we have talked about this before when the economic models came out about a year before the 2016 election, saying Obama should lose. We said, well, yeah, because the economic models, if the economy is booming, and normally you're reelected again. If the economy is doing, excuse me, not Obama would lose, but the Democrats would lose. I'm sorry, not Obama wasn't running for a third term.
Mm-hmm.
But the Democrats would lose based on the Obama economy. And we said, well, yeah, economic model came out yesterday. They were promoting saying Trump, if this stays, should win in a landslide.
Right.
Based on, and again, you're basing it on economic models from previous elections. As we've said, though, the whole world has changed since 2016.
Yeah.
So I don't make those same consistent projections based on history, because we are in a different time right now. But you said this, I believe it was off the air yesterday. You said this election is Trump's to lose.
It really is. And you look at the, because of the, I think, the situation with the tariffs, what we're seeing with manufacturers and farmers is very real. And the president knows that. There's a reason that if you look at some of the reaction the president has had and what they're doing in the Midwest and the whole ethanol move, that was a nod to farmers. But it's not enough, because it's not just the ethanol farmers that are losing, of course, in the tariff situation. Then you look at the auto manufacturers and other major manufacturers. The cost of the raw materials skyrocketing unnecessarily is hurting their business. And those manufacturing jobs, whether people are actually working on the line at a manufacturer or actually farming in the farming states, there is that direct connection with that industry. Texas is a huge producer, for instance. So there are a lot of connections, indirect connections and direct connections with the oil industry. So that is your economy. And you're going to be affected negatively by that. And so the question is, how bad is it in the Midwest? How bad is it in some of those manufacturing states like Ohio and Michigan right now? Where are the president's poll numbers there? Do they trust, let's say all the tariffs were done away with tomorrow. Steel, aluminum, China, North American Free Trade Agreement, everything was sealed up, nice little bow on it, and we were done with that. Then you have to go back and find out where the trust level is. I suspect the farmers are still going to trust Trump, but there's going to be an ill effect in place as long as the tariffs are in place.
Right.
And that's the problem. It's not so much that they're going to go vote for Biden or Beto or somebody else, but if they stay home, that's damaging as well. If they don't show up in numbers, especially in those states where the president won that they didn't expect him to win, that's going to have to be part of the game plan this time. I think, especially with the way it's shaping up on the left, this really is the president's reelection to lose. This election cycle next year is his to lose. And it's all about the economy. And there are two major things, I think, that he can do. Because I think he's won on the whole border security thing. Whether he actually even gets the wall, he's won. And that motivates people. That, you know, they put their trust and believe he's going to be strong on national security. Border security.
Who is going to be stronger?
Right. Beto, who says it's okay to take the walls down in his hometown, or the president who's fighting and still fighting and likely will still be fighting on Election Day.
A Joe Biden with Stacey Abrams as his vice presidential candidate, who will be raked over the coals if he decides to go that way, because she's for open borders and sanctuary cities.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead. That's the one that you want, Joe. But the president, though, over the last couple of days has made, made the exact point that we have said. The president is saying that we don't have the economic growth because the current federal funds rate is 2.5%. Mm-hmm. And it's gone up, over the last couple of years? Maybe a percent? A full percent?
Yeah.
Because they've raised it over a period of time.
Right.
And he's stating that's the reason that we don't have 4%, why we didn't have 4% economic growth, and it's hurting economic growth right now because of that fund rate.
Mm-hmm.
You had 25% steel tariffs and 10% aluminum tariffs and 10% China tariffs. That type of increase in raw materials is helping the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Can't make that case.
No.
And he did it. He did initially, you know, when he would say tariffs are good, but that's the one thing that he's been all over the place. He has held every single position on free trade, every single position on tariffs. He has said, well, I know tariffs are hurting. Then he said tariffs are great. He's been all over the place on it. But the fact is, he knows that when you increase the cost of doing business, whether it's interest rates going up mildly, it's going to have some type of effect. One of the reasons that the Fed raises rates is so the economy, which I think is ridiculous, I think it should be just a floating thing of what the market will take. Personally, I don't think the Fed should be involved in it. You and I have had this discussion many, many times. Mm-hmm. It should be what the market will bear. Mm-hmm. Well, there'll be too much fluctuation. Well, maybe initially, but then it will calm down, and the economy can handle a little fluctuation here or there. So I don't agree with the Fed, because I think a lot of times they'll raise and lower it, and it's arbitrary.
Right.
You know, it's what they think it should be instead of what market forces dictate it should be. So I would, you know, I would agree with that. But the 2.5% rate that we have right now is not why we didn't reach 4% growth. It's not why the Fed right now is looking at growth for this year of 2.1%. Mm-hmm. It's the tariffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's
the tariffs, and it's also economic growth worldwide. Also,
right. What we're seeing from our, you know, the trade partners, but the point being, there are things that the federal government can control, and then outside forces that they can't control. The president the other day saying, no, hey, there's been a lot of talk about me doing away with the tariffs on China. I'm not going to do away with them until we know China's playing by the rules. That was a message to China. But it's also a message to the market and to the farmers right now who are scrambling to save their farms. So I agree that we should hold China's feet to the fire. But there are plenty of ways to do that. In fact, his chief economic advisor has talked about it for a while now. Larry Kudlow has talked about how we get together with the rest of the global trade partners and we put the pressure collectively on them. In fact, that's how we're handling North Korea. Now, I know there's a huge difference, vast difference, in the economies of North Korea and China and trade between the U.S. And all that. That I get that. But the point is it's the same tactic, and it can be done because politically China knows that while it's a negative for their leadership, on their side, it's a negative here, and it works in a much different way, of course, because you have two different political systems. You have the political pressure here in the U.S. And the sentiment that is very effective and could be effective on the president is very different than what China goes through in terms of political pressure. If something's hurting, President Xi, that's just another day at the office. Well, Trump's numbers are down in November of 2020. The economy is down in 2020, and he can't win those states in the Midwest. And keep in mind, Ohio, Michigan, these other key states, if he can't win those states, he doesn't win re-election. So that's going to have to be something that, and I don't know where the solution is. He's given no indication as to how long it could be.
And my thing is, I don't know. I mean, look, there are great unknowns here. If he doesn't, and there's no indication, even though Canada and Mexico have agreed, and the president said, I will drop the tariffs once we agree, and they agreed, and he did not drop the tariffs, mm-hmm. That hurts.
Yeah.
That hurts supply, that hurts supply chains, because countries and companies worldwide say, we can't trust the United States. The president says one thing and does another. Okay, where are reliable trading partners out there?
Right.
Where do we know that we can get a consistent supply chain at a consistent cost? And if you can't get it, and as we said all along, and we're not going to convince many of you listening right now. You believe that people that you like or you prefer in political office can change how people respond to incentive and disincentive. And you can't. And the president can't. No one can. And as long as you believe that economics and how people respond can be molded by somebody in a central political bureaucracy, well, then you're doomed to have an economy that will not grow at the growth rate that makes it so we can have full employment, mm-hmm. that we can bring in more to the federal treasury, and that we can ensure that long term we have a good, solid economy that can compete worldwide. It's that simple.
But everything else is in place.
But we tend to believe the delusion that the guy we like, well, if somebody, well, look, it's the same thing as the socialist. The socialist would say, look, the problem is that we didn't have the right people running the socialist system. Mm-hmm. All right, that's the problem. It's not the right person running the socialist system. If the right people ran it, then it would work. Well, when we have a capitalist system, we get the same thing. Well, it's because the right people aren't running the capitalist system. No, the problem is when central bureaucrats believe that they can run any type of political system, be it more socialist or be it more socialist capitalist or more capitalist with a little bit of socialism in it. It's the belief that a person can mold how people respond to incentive and disincentive, and that is impossible. It never happens. It never works. No. Because people do what? They act in their own self-interest.
Yep.
And so that's, you know, the challenge that this president has, and I don't know how long it's going to take. If they remove the tariffs today, I don't know if the economy rebounds. I just don't know. In a year, I don't know. Because the president has been too inconsistent in the messages that he sends out to other countries about trade. Well, it's great because the president's throwing out threats. And then countries will respond saying, well, we don't know. We don't know if we've got a consistent market with the United States. We don't know if the president's going to break his promise. Mm-hmm. Canada, Mexico, the president said he was going to drop it if we came to an agreement. We came to an agreement. He said it's a great agreement. He's bragging this is the best agreement ever, and he won't drop the tariffs that he agreed to drop if we got to the agreement. The whole world looks at that and says, can't trust the United States. We need to find other trading partners.
Long term.
Long term.
And once those agreements are in place, how do you win that back?
And by the way, we're not the only ones saying that. The president's own advisors have said that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not in the same way, but that's what they have said.
Right. I mean, that's what's going on right now.
Kudlow has said it. Steve Moore just said it here
recently.
Talk
to the farmers in the Midwest, and they'll tell you how much they're hurting. You have Chapter 12s up by nearly 20%.
And that's why, as we said, and we said it yesterday, I said, yeah, you're right. This is the president's election to win or lose.
Yes. It is.
Because the other side, they're insane.
Yep.
They are. Their ideas are insane.
Mm-hmm.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on driver wellness. Passing a DOT medical exam clears you to remain driving, but don't forget to also schedule a yearly exam with your primary care physician. Routine physicals can help expose any potentially serious health issues. They'll provide a more complete picture of your health situation. Appointments with your family doctor are typically more comprehensive than a DOT exam. A family doctor will also discuss personal and family history and lifestyle. The older we get, the more important these physicals become. As we age, the chances of developing serious health issues rise, and the risks of developing certain cancers and other illnesses increase as well. So, when you schedule that DOT exam, remember to make time to see your family doctor, too. It might be a life-changing experience. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, just reading the ABC articles that, well, sources tell us no indictment's coming, that this whole thing is over, and they go through the fact and say, you know, what Rod Rosenstein said last year is really what's going to happen in the Mueller investigation, sources tell us, where they're really not going to hit Trump hard at all because they're only going to go after what the rules and regulations of the Justice Department actually say.
Right.
Which are, no, sorry, here are the indictments, boom. We'll get to more of the specifics on that because I find that just fascinating. More on the whole Hillary email situation, too. coming up, because some interesting things there. Plus, James Comey speaking. I don't care if Mueller finds wrongdoing from Trump, by Trump, as long as we get full transparency. Well, I believe it's Kimberly Strassel who wrote in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, and I read, there's a portion I'll read you coming up here, where maybe he really doesn't want full transparency because of, after James Baker's testimony last week, which contradicts Comey, said they knew. They knew this was a bogus.
Right.
They knew that the dossier was bogus. They're trying to run, you know, around this as if, well, we just weren't sure. You know, they knew. And testimony, we'll tell you what was actually said in the testimony coming up. That was just, she just got a hold of this.
Making overnight radio great again. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Good morning. How is everybody doing?
Happy Friday. It's the bonus show.
It's our Friday.
The bonus show.
That's right.
I'm just trying to get my stories all together here. There's so much going on. Here it is. Two stories from ABC, all right?
All right.
One story. No more indictments expected to come from Robert Mueller. Probe, sources say. Letter from Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein offers potential roadmap to Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe. Sources familiar with the probe believe there are no more indictments expected. Jonathan Carl, ABC News. Important to say ABC because we're not talking about any conservative outlet out there that people might believe would be biased in favor of the president.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot make that case for ABC.
No.
No shortage of speculation on Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report. The bottom line, do not expect a harsh condemnation of President Donald Trump or any of his associates if they have not been charged with crimes. The roadmap comes in the form of a little notice 12-page letter written by Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein last June to Chuck Grassley. The letter was in response to Grassley's demand for more information on the special counsel's investigation, offering a brief history of special counsel investigations, and actually quotes former and future Attorney General William Barr, who appointed three special counsels during his time as Attorney General under President George Herbert Walker Bush. In the letter, Rosenstein makes it clear he believes the Department of Justice will not and cannot, without violating longstanding Department of Justice policy, include any incriminating information about anyone who has not been charged with a crime. Punishing wrongdoers through the judicial proceedings is only one part of the department's mission. Rosenstein wrote, we also have a duty to prevent the disclosure of information that would unfairly tarnish people who are not charged with crimes. Sources familiar with the investigation told ABC News there are no more indictments coming. So there we are.
You had two of the top investigators on Mueller's team leave this week or over the last week. And that's an indication, too, that they're wrapping it up. And if you don't have any court filings at this point, and you've got your two top investigators or two of the top investigators basically going on, moving on to their next job or whatever they're doing, then at that point you're likely to see. I think it was the first time I noticed it in the liberal media. Chris Saliza at CNN said it'll likely be a report. Now, I don't think he went as far as ABC did here to say that it's not going to be a wagging of the finger. You know, that's something we and a lot of people speculated about. Could it be something that says, well, while we didn't have enough to go on in terms of indictment, This was wrong and that was wrong. If you think about what the statement was on July 5th of 2016 about the Hillary email investigation by Comey at the time, he lined out what she did and how she broke the law, but said no reasonable prosecutor would pursue it. And that's, I think, why a lot of people said, well, you might see something like that, right, by a Mueller. Well, this was wrong, that was wrong, we just really don't believe it should be pursued. And so now it's at the point, and I wonder how much the liberal media has known. For weeks now, they've moved on from the Mueller thing. They have put zero confidence. There hasn't been... How many gotcha moments over the last, well, since Mueller's been in place, have there been?
I don't know.
It's
10, 15?
10, 15, right? It's like, this is it. He's going down. Cohen, when he got busted, I mean, you know, when they went into his office. Then Cohen on Capitol Hill. Man, you talk about a dud farm. That guy produces nothing but duds. And it was not the big gotcha. So if there were anything at all for the media to go on, I believe we would know that something huge is coming down. Well, we'll go back to, what's his name? Chuck Todd, Sleepy Chuck Todd, who said, this was weeks ago. Man, how it was a couple months ago?
A couple months ago, yeah.
He says, I wouldn't want to miss Work Friday, you know, because the indictments were coming down on Fridays. And so don't miss work on Friday because he was expecting something to happen that weekend. And it didn't happen. They built up an entire expectation. And now you look at it, and if the ABC story here is correct, and they're basically just going to turn off the lights and hand it over to Barr, and Barr's going to look at it and go, there's nothing really here for Barr to release to the to Congress or to the public. So it's time to move on.
Well, here's the interesting thing is the fact that, because you and I asked this question, will the report from Mueller, because what we hear is even James Comey yesterday saying, well, all we want is full transparency. Well, when Rosenstein, as ABC points out, said last year, in fact, disclosing uncharged allegations against American citizens without a law enforcement need is considered to be a violation of the prosecutor's trust.
Right.
Later, it makes it clear the supplies standard applies to anybody under investigation, even public officials. No matter who an investigation involves, an ordinary citizen, a local or state politician, a campaign official, a foreign agent, an officer of the federal legislature, executive or judicial branch, agents and prosecutors are obligated to protect its confidentiality. In the letter, Rosenstein takes direct issue with the justification then FBI Director James Comey used to publicly criticize Hillary Clinton in 2016, even as he decided not to charge her with the crime.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, that was the case at the point
right.
that the Democrats were all jumping at the time. Comey justified the break with longtime Department of Justice practice as an extraordinary step necessary because the circumstances so unusual that they were comparable to a 500-year flood. Rosenstein disagreed with that. But you and I talked about, well, what if Comey's report is simply, here's who we indicted.
Mm-hmm.
And it says nothing about Trump.
Right.
Where you can't go and say, okay, what does the report say? We need to get everything in there. Well, the report doesn't say anything except talk about who we indicted and why we indicted those who we indicted. Anybody who isn't indicted isn't actually in that report.
Think about the indictments that came down against the Russians. And when that came down, those 13 Russians, they were very clear. The Mueller team was very clear that no Americans were involved. If you look at the end report, it would make sense if it's now... We've talked about how if he doesn't include the whole DNC thing and the Hillary thing and then Fusion GPS and knowingly using false information to solicit for a warrant, you really haven't done your job, because the directive, I think, from Rosenstein certainly covered that. It's the very essence and beginning of this entire thing. But
if they, again, if he doesn't release it, we won't know whether went down that path or not.
Right. And
we won't know.
He may not even put that in his report.
Which then, if you look at that, that would be the Senate's job and Lindsey Graham to figure that all out.
Right.
You go the political route as to get full transparent, not the criminal justice route, but even though I do believe that that's where it would take you down as an investigation, if he leaves that out completely because we made no indictments, we won't even know if he went down that path and went to look at the FISA warrant or any of the emails or what happened in the Department of Justice or anything else. Now, as an investigator, I believe they should have gone down those paths, but if he follows strict Justice Department regulations, we will never even know whether they looked at that or not, correct?
Right. And so, in fact, the Barr may be the only person.
Well, maybe Barr won't be. Maybe in the report that's given to Barr, not that the information doesn't exist in their notes of the actual investigation, and I don't know what happens to those notes.
Mm-hmm. Well, from what I understand of it, the report to Barr would include all of their work. In other words, you know, when you're back in the day, your math teacher, show your work. In other words, this is what we did, and these are the indictments that came from it. Not that it would be, okay, we looked into this, we looked
so
into
Barr
that.
So Barr gets to see everything.
Yes. Show your work, essentially, that you were on this and you looked at this
because
and you looked
that's
at this.
That's my question. Is that does Barr get to see everything, or do they just give him a report stating these are the indictments, here's what went down, we explain all the indictments and everything else, and if he gives them more, what we went down this path, we found nothing. How detailed do they get in the report to Barr, I guess, would be my question.
Well, here's another thing. What if they spent 100% of their time on the whole Manafort thing, on the other items along the way, and that was their work? All their work actually led to the indictments that we already know about, that already happened. The Russians, Manafort, and everything else.
Then I would have if I was Barr, I would have a question, which was, why didn't you go in that direction? Can I ask why you didn't go in that direction? Mm-hmm. Now, it may be a confidential discussion that nobody gets to hear. Mm-hmm. But that would be my question. But it looks like Lindsey Graham is going down that path. But my point is, the American people need, whether it comes out of the criminal investigation or the political investigation, America needs to know what happened there.
And I think it's quite possible that, as you know, the Senate Judiciary Committee chairman, that Lindsey Graham either already suspects it based on the fact that there were no more court filings, that they weren't going to go down, because that actually has been some of the talking points among the conservative circles in the past couple of weeks, that if they had gone down that path and it was shown that they had knowingly used false information to solicit for the warrant and presented false information to the FISA courts, then we would see the filings and the indictments there. So they suspect that nothing's going to come of that. That's not going to be a part of it. And I wonder if Lindsey Graham either already knows that because of a leak, or he just has put the math together like everybody else.
But if you were Barr, wouldn't you ask?
Oh, I wouldn't, yeah.
The special counsel, why didn't you go down that path?
Right. Or does Barr already know that Mueller's not, that's not going to be a central part of the investigation?
Off the record. I mean, mm-hmm. because technically Barr is still the boss. Mm-hmm. So you'd say, hey, isn't your investigator, why didn't you go that? What was your thinking? Even if that never gets out to the public, you would ask that question, would you not? Why didn't you, if your whole thing was to see if Trump colluded with the Russians, the best information you would have gotten early on would have been the FISA application and the warrant. Why didn't you go in that direction? Why did you never look that way?
Well, because that would be, yeah, to satisfy his own curiosity.
Yes.
But it's not like he's going to put Mueller back to work.
No.
The question is, would he pursue something else outside of what Lindsey Graham will pursue
In having that discussion with Mueller, if he didn't go down there and Lindsey Graham is calling for a special counsel, well, that could be part of the decision that, okay, Mueller did go down that road and found nothing. And so we don't see the need for a special counsel, or he didn't go in that direction, which means we need to have a special counsel.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Quickly to Rod in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Rod, hi, you're on Red Eye Radio. Wanted to get you quickly here before the top of the hour.
Yeah, good morning, guys. I believe Donald Trump doesn't believe Robert Mueller will ever go after the Democrats. That's why he turned everything over to the Inspector General. He doesn't trust Robert Mueller, not as far as I could throw this bright liner.
That could be a point, or the biggest point is they saw law breaking. And when they saw law breaking, in the FISA warrant and the things he was going to declassify,
right.
They believe it was law breaking. They said it has to go to the Inspector General because we can't release it and cry law breaking. We got to give it to the Inspector General. That's separate from the executive branch, so he can do it.
Well, and that's it. I think it's pretty much known now. Thanks, Rod, for the call. If you think about the way what we know, all the known facts on the other side. I think it's actually both. I think Trump probably believes, look, Mueller's not pursuing this side of it. So what do we do? Well, if Trump comes out and he speaks on it, he does something, well, that's just purely political.
Right.
You hand it to the IG's office, let the IG do his job, Horowitz, and if you believe wrongdoing is there, then Horowitz is going to find it, and he's going to issue his report, which could be much more damning than Mueller's.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara.
I'm Ted Koppel. The media's out to get Donald Trump.
You haven't done Ted in a while.
I haven't. I was tempted the other night when we were playing the audio, but... Yeah. And here is, by the way, Ted Koppel walking out to the parking lot, discovering he has a flat tire. Oh, no. I don't know.
I wondered where you were going with that, and you were really going nowhere.
Nowhere.
Which made it funnier.
Ted Koppel saying, oh, no, that's all that was. Yeah.
Attention affiliates.
We're going long. We're going home early is what we're doing. We're leaving earlier because Mueller is going to issue his report any minute.
You made me think of something.
What's
just
that?
Just by bringing that up, that if the report comes out and there's nothing there on Trump, no criminal conspiracy, that it's going to be big. That's going to be something that the president can really hold over the Democrats. It has been 2.5 years. You know, we talk about things that could be that are slam dunks.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go back to what Ted Koppel said, look, the media is out to get Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the last 2 years, whether it's Jim Acosta, a significant portion of the media people on CNN, New York Times, MSNBC, Washington Post. Kellyanne Conway's husband. The president's counselor's husband.
Yeah. Right.
they have gone after this president as being paranoid and destroying the media. That the president, by attacking the media, is somehow threatening the First Amendment, right?
Right.
Then you've got Ted Koppel coming out. Ted Koppel.
Oh, no.
Forget about Uncle Joe. We're talking Uncle Ted.
Yeah.
Uncle Ted that has massive liberal media credentials.
Yeah.
Comes out and says, yeah, it's obvious they're going after Trump.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing journalism. Not that journalism doesn't exist, but, you know, at these companies, there are some journalists there and journalism does exist. But it's obvious they are going after Trump. They don't like him. They believe he's bad for the country and they believe it's their mission to do it. That's exactly what Trump has been
saying.
Yep. And as we have said before, look, sometimes he goes off the rails. It's obvious.
Sometimes.
But sometimes, as we have said, was it Conspiracy Theory with
Mel Gibson?
With Mel Gibson?
I may be paranoid, but I'm also right.
Right. It was something quality. I may be paranoid, but sometimes the paranoia is right. Or you may think I'm paranoid, but sometimes the paranoia is right.
Right.
And in this case, you know, Koppel coming out and saying it, and what we love is I have seen zero criticism of Ted Koppel.
Right. I haven't seen any backlash there at all.
Somebody may have, but it hasn't been somebody. There might have been some criticism out there,
but not the collective.
There wasn't that collective criticism that rises to the level that he's a Trump lover, so you need to just discard him. Ted Koppel is no longer. He must be a secret Trump lover. We have to disassociate ourselves with him. You didn't see that kind of thing happening. But the report comes out today, and as we're seeing it already, the media, and you and I wonder, okay, we're told there are no leaks. Sources are telling, sources in the know are telling ABC News there are no more indictments coming, but nothing's leaking. Technically, isn't that a leak?
Yeah, right.
And I guess technically is all that matters here. Who are your sources in the know? Well, the only sources in the know would be people that work for Mueller.
Right. Which means it's a leak.
And you and I have wondered the fact that, okay, it's been so obvious that the media is getting ready over the last few weeks, really the last month, for what they see as a letdown coming. And I don't know. We're not in the know. We're, as the caller from yesterday, you guys are down in Texas. We're down in Texas. We have no sources anywhere, even though we're accused of having sources and moles inside the government. We do not.
Yeah, we don't, as far as you know.
Well, I don't.
We don't have any source. We don't have any sources we can talk about. See, I told you.
Well, remember, this has been, you want to unite your party together. You want to unite against, because remember, in politics, your goal is, number one, to promote what you do that is good. And the second thing is to label your political opponents, your political enemies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only thing he may not be able to say that Mueller's investigation is a witch hunt, but he can certainly say the Democrats have been on a witch hunt, and because he can't say Mueller's on a witch hunt if Mueller comes back and says, "Oh, we got nothing on Trump, we're not going after him."
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Now he may still say that because they went after his business, and if the Southern District of New York goes after some of the things there, he might still continue to say if the Mueller investigation didn't happen, which is why he's going after John McCain this week because of that.
Right. And I think that the left is going to they're going to play this out as well. Of course, they're not going to go after a sitting president. Of course, but we all know what happened. We all know, you know, because They clearly want to continue to hang the cloud of doubt over the president's head. You know, they'll or they'll move on, whatever the Southern District does, if they do anything, they'll move on to that. I mean, which they do. They jump on, you know, it's the lily pad approach. Well, this one floats us for now, so we'll jump on this one. You know, it was collusion, then it was obstruction. Then it was collusion again, and then it was obstruction again. And it's and then it was he's shady and mafia like and he has a fixer, not a lawyer.
Now wait, but there's two points there. If there's no criminal conspiracy and there's no collusion, you've just lost two of the narratives from Democrats. And I just think I think Republicans will just pound on that over the next year. And as it continue, as we get more information, because remember now, what will the attack be? I mean, they may go after business dealings that Trump did years ago. Public isn't going to be mesmerized by that. That's not the same as colluding with the Russians to hack the election.
Right.
But then what's going to be happening on the other side, Lindsey Graham, look, you're going to have Adam Schiff going after what we don't know. But I think the big news will be where Lindsey Graham is going with the Senate Judiciary Committee looking at the FBI. Look, Kimberly Strassel came out with her article yesterday, the what FBI counsel told Congress. The fact that James Baker, the former general counsel for the Federal Bureau of Investigation, as she said, Baker's testimony shows Comey wasn't being fully candid about the dossier. And I want to read just a couple of points here. She goes, Comey and others at the FBI like to tell a tale in which the FBI obtained its dossier of Trump allegations via controlled interactions with one reliable source, dossier author Christopher Steele. And she is reliable in quotes. Mr. Baker makes clear the FBI knew that Glenn Simpson, head of the opposition research firm Fusion GPS, was papering Washington with his scandalous material, which the Democratic National Committee and Clinton campaign paid him to have Mr. Steele gather. And what she's saying is this is transcripts that she, you know, got a hold of Baker, which has now become clear. These transcripts are coming out. Quote, this is from James Baker. Quote, my understanding at the time was that Simpson was going around Washington giving this out to a lot of different people and trying to elevate its profile, Mr. Baker testified. More importantly, the FBI understood it was the target of this pressure campaign. Mr. Baker acknowledges that there were, quote, various copies of the dossier floating around Washington and that they were all being funneled to the FBI. Mr. Baker explains that the top FBI leadership was told Justice Department Attorney Bruce Ohr had some type of relationship with Mr. Steele and that somehow through that mechanism, information was flowing to the FBI. He said that his longtime friend, the liberal Mother Jones reporter David Cohn, also fed the FBI the dossier. I know that David was anxious to get this into the hands of the FBI, and being the person at the FBI that he knew best, he wanted to give it to me. Mr. Baker admits that he assumed Mr. Cohn got it from Simpson or somebody else acting at Simpson's behalf. He further admits a lawyer with ties to the DNC, Michael Sussman, also passed along the Baker documents with Trump Russia accusations. The former general counsel even acknowledged that the dossier crowd knew exactly what it was doing in choosing its funnels. Evidence doesn't normally flow to the Bureau through the Justice Department lawyers or the FBI general counsels, but Mr. Baker says that's because Mr. Orr's pre-existing relationship with Mr. Steele, the FBI allowed Justice to play the back channel. And part of the question in as to why other outsiders chose to come to him of all people, Mr. Baker admits that, well, anything coming from the general counsel's office would be taken more seriously. Again, getting back to the point we've said, it's not whether the dossier was credible or not. It was the people that were transferring the dossier to others that gave it its credibility. Mr. Comey and other FBI defenders also like to say the FBI had no reason to doubt Mr. Steele's reliability or motives or to think that the FBI might be subjected to political manipulation. Mr. Comey declared to his own declared in his own House testimony, "I don't even remember hearing the name Fusion GPS, and that it didn't matter who funded the work." But Mr. Baker's testimony makes it clear the FBI was highly aware of Mr. Simpson and his reputation and of the risk all of this would blow up. The general counsel explained that the FBI's application to eavesdrop on Carter Page through a FISA warrant was one of the few he ever personally reviewed. Why? It was because it was sensitive and controversial and targeted a person with connections to a candidate for the office of President of the United States. That, Mr. Baker said, was also why in its FISA application we were obligated to talk about Simpson and what the hell we knew about him. That's a quote. To namely assert, alert the FISA court to the fact that there was a range of issues with respect to the providence of this information and the relationship we had with respect to Mr. Simpson and his credibility. Mr. Baker nonetheless fails to explain how that range of issues was communicated via the obscure footnote the FBI ultimately included in its application. What he's saying is, you're saying that, but from what we know, that's not in the application the way you're saying that, oh, we wanted to make sure that the FISA court knew all of this. That's where she doubts his testimony.
Right.
Because, and again, it just keeps, and she even said, you know, look, what we're getting is drip, 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 drip. And you and I asked yesterday about Trump going off on McCain. And it's because Trump knows, because of what he was going to declassify. Is it because Trump knows more and is furious at McCain?
And is he dying to just shout it at the top of his lungs and knows he shouldn't do that because he needs the IG report to come out and say it all?
When Trump came out with the tweet and said, and we were like, why did he say that? Because the testimony from Kramer, what, you know, the former assistant or the guy who's ahead of the McCain Institution too, that Kramer didn't say that McCain passed the information, the dossier information before the election in October to Comey. He never said that. Why did Trump say that? And we're asking the question, did Trump slip?
Right.
Because everybody's been quiet on that one, even Comey.
Yeah, is did he slip because he's dying to scream it at the top of his lungs, that he really wants to talk about it, which at some point he may be able to do if that's what the IG report
shows. Well,
all
this information is going to come out, and if Trump is cleared by the special counsel, if there's nothing there, there is going to be pounding by the Republicans that's going to be, it's not going to stop until after the election. With the drip, drip, drip now coming out against the Obama administration officials and the FBI and the Department of Justice and the intelligence agencies, and with Lindsey Graham on it, we could be in a completely different place a year from now.
Well, and there's the question, too. Barr could decide to release it. The president's saying release it. Because if it doesn't show that side of it, the former administration, and now it looks more and more like they were knowingly soliciting for a FISA warrant, which means they were lying to the FISA court judges. If it doesn't show that entire part of this equation, then you've got a lot of questions to be asked by Republicans like Lindsey Graham and, I think, the Justice Department, including the AG.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. I just think that if he comes out, and even if they don't release any of it, if Barr doesn't do it, and even if, you know, if things leak out slowly, as long as there are no indictments and there shows and there is no criminal conspiracy indictments with the Russians and no obstruction of justice, you've lost it all. trying to go down, if the left tries to go down the path, well, but we found out that this one person talked to this one person. That's not going to go anywhere, especially with Lindsey Graham. Because I think Lindsey Graham, I do think that they smell blood in the water. I think the Republicans, I do think that the Republicans who were never sure about Trump in this whole thing and have always been wary because of maybe his business practices and what happened to Manafort and everything else. Some of the people he surrounded himself with were a little wary. But I think now you're going to have Republicans, especially going into 2020, saying that it was a witch hunt, but it was a witch hunt from the Democrats. And I think they're going to pound on this. And I do think that Lindsey Graham and I think a lot of other Republicans now look at this and say, if you want to see where the collusion was, if you want to see who was trying to affect the election, if you want to see who was dealing with the Russians, if you want to see where the possible criminal conspiracies are, it was with the Obama administration, FBI, and Department of Justice.
Here's your forecast.
A coastal low pulling offshore in the east will continue to cause rain showers today from New York City into Boston. As you get a little further inland from the southern Appalachian Mountains up through the Laurel Highlands of Maryland, you're going to pick up a little light snow. Mixed precip also includes portions of the PA Turnpike, especially in and around Allentown, and then up towards Lake Erie into upstate New York and then on into Maine. So a narrow band of potentially mixed precip associated with that system. We'll also see some lake effect snow in portions of Michigan. For the desert southwest, a low pressure area provides rain showers for southern New Mexico and western Texas. We'll also see some snow flurries in the higher elevations of the central Rockies. That'll extend over to Nevada. Some onshore rain for northern California and southern Oregon. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Bona Show.
And he is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So new research here out shows that nearly 6 in 10 Americans believe the First Amendment is under threat. Yet a large portion of the respondents could not correctly name what the amendment protects. Of the 2,000 adults who took part in the poll, half thought that liberty is one of the 5 freedoms protected by the First Amendment, while nearly half, 49%, believe the pursuit of happiness was in the First Amendment. Thankfully, as they say here, only 3% named life as one of the protected freedoms in the First Amendment. What's more, barely than a quarter, 26% of participants knew how many amendments even comprise the Bill of Rights? That was just 26%. Could only tell you how many amendments are in the Bill of Rights. Wow. In fact, 1 out of 5 people, 20% of the Americans surveyed, were not even familiar with the Bill of Rights when asked. Uh, 57% of respondents feel the First Amendment is at risk, even though more than half could not tell you what the First Amendment was. And the survey came out about 6 months ago that was even more specific. It showed that close to 70% could not name all the freedoms in the First Amendment to the Constitution.
What's interesting is, and I wonder about that,
would be for people that don't know, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom to peaceably assemble. I'm doing this from memory here. Freedom to petition the government for a redress of grievances and freedom of religion.
And the information is at our fingertips.
Well, I've known that since I was in junior high school.
Mm-hmm. But if you don't, it's still at your fingertips.
Oh, yeah.
The point
yeah,
being
so
is
like,
that
yes.
If you're ignorant today, you are willfully ignorant. You choose not to pursue it. And if you live in a society, and by the way, you're also free to not pursue it. But it, I guess the question would be, how willing are you to defend liberty? And I don't mean in the military, not that kind of defense, but I mean in discussions and defend the very basic principles of our country that serve every citizen. If you don't have that basic understanding, then you don't have the will to go out and learn something that you didn't learn in school or you just don't remember, then what is it that you're pursuing? Is it simply superficial?
Well, is everything about selfishness? Is that the only thing that a significant number of people understand? It's just give me what I want. I don't understand how you cannot be naturally inquisitive about the society that you live in and understand how it's made up, what the rules and regulations are, and what the ultimate law is, the Constitution, and understand the system that you live under. And I know, because you and I do this for a living, I will say, and I think I'm safe on saying this, 90% of the people that disagree with us have no clue, especially when we talk constitutional issues, have no clue what the Constitution is about. They have no idea why our society was formed. Kevin Williamson, by the way, in National Review, wrote an article yesterday, the Burn It Down Democrats. The Senate, the Electoral College, it's almost as if he was listening to us yesterday, but the Senate, the Electoral College, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Supreme Court, is there a part of our constitutional order that the Democrats have not pledged to destroy?
Right.
We're not talking about a disagreement in how much we believe welfare payments should be. We're talking about the Democrats saying we need to destroy the Constitution and the basic tenets of it. And he talks about the fact that, you know, there may be people that are ignorant across the board. He said, but Democrats in Washington are a different story. Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris went to law school. They understand the American constitutional order just fine. They just hate it. And he makes the best point when we talk about why we're a republic and not a pure democracy, because that's just, I hear that consistently, and I just want to look at these people and scream and say, you're just being stupid, or just completely and willfully ignorant. But he says, the American order is complex. It is much more sophisticated than a democracy, which assumes that nothing stands between the individual and the national state, except aggregation that might, defined as 50% plus one, makes right. The American order is based on the idea that the United States consists of many different kinds of people in many different kinds of communities, and that each of these has interests that are legitimate even when they conflict with equally legitimate interests of other communities. The densely populous urban mode of life is not the only mode of life, and the people of urban areas are not entitled by their greater numbers to dominate their fellow citizens in the less populous rural areas. The basic units of the United States are, as the name suggests, the states. The states created the federal government, not the other way around. The states are not administrative subdivisions of the federal government. which is their instrument, not their master. In this, the United States is fundamentally different from countries such as the United Kingdom and Japan that have unitary national governments under which provincial distinctions are largely not relevant. In our system, the states matter. Under the Democrats' vision, only some states matter. California, Texas, Florida, New York, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and Ohio, which without the institutions of federalism have among them the numbers and the power to effectively dominate the rest of the country. At the time of its founding, the people of the smaller states did not desire to enter into a union in which they and their interests would be dominated by the larger ones. The people of the smaller states still do not. And as we talked about, it gets into the same thing, too, when they talk about the Electoral College. And then, as we said, the next thing would be the Senate. And that was brought up by some Democrats a few months ago. Well, then the Senate would have to go, too, because if it's a pure democracy, only the votes count. That the 51% can dominate the 49%. It means you have no idea why the country exists. You have no idea what the country is about. You have no idea that the country was predicated on the protection of individual rights. And the individual rights and the protection of the minority from the tyranny of the majority. They have no idea. And they don't care to know. Why? Because I do believe selfishness and envy is what reigns. You know, this is really not talked about enough in this country. I know we've talked about it a lot. And it all started, this goes back to when I was working, so probably my fifth year in talk radio. And it came up, there was a mayor of a city I was working in that said, racism is the worst problem. I never forget just thinking about it when he said that. And I went, no, it's not. Envy and jealousy is. Because most people aren't walking around thinking, I'm genetically superior to you. Oh, your skin color is different. I'm a little bit paler. I'm Irish, of course. My genetics are much superior to you. I'm a superior being. Nobody really buys into that.
Plus, if you're Irish, you can naturally drink more.
Okay, we do have that advantage.
Mm-hmm. And clearly you're more willing to fight.
And we wants me gold.
Seriously, they went with the fighting Irish?
Well,
And it's a leprechaun with his fists in the air, ready to fight.
Well, you remember that when you go back to the history of that's why I got a little bit critical this St. Patrick's Day when some Irish were being offended. Notre Dame Fighting Irish came because it was an insult that the opposition fans would scream at them. It was meant as an insult to Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
That was you, and so they took the insult and said, "Oh, fine, mm-hmm. That's what we'll call ourselves."
Right.
But that's what the opposing fans would scream that to insult Notre Dame, and they said, "Okay, fine. We'll take that. Go ahead."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't care. But when I look at the one thing I see more than anything. And if you look at the Democrats, and Bernie Sanders' campaign was a perfect example. College kids, well, you're never going to make it. You're at a disadvantage. Why? Because the billionaires have screwed you over. Victim, oppressor, victim, oppressor, victim, oppressor. The pie keeps expanding. You and I said this a long time ago when the whole transgender movement really amped up about 5-6 years ago. And we said, well, wait till the feminists wake up, the liberal feminists. And now what do we find out? The oppressor of the transgender movement, the new oppressor, is Martina Navratilova.
Yes, she's far right. We know that.
Exactly. But this is...
Was she hired by Fox News?
Wait for it.
But this, you know, this is what we're, you know, this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with envy and jealousy. That's what we're dealing with.
Well, and
we're dealing with,
in terms of the discussion, it's gone away completely. The left doesn't want to do anything but throw
the most extreme labels at anybody that disagrees with them. Well, while we go back to the city of Baltimore and the mayor's commission, and there was a lesbian that served on that commission. And she called a man who said he was a transgender woman and then was able to get transferred to another prison. He committed rape, by the way. He was a rapist. She called him by the wrong pronoun, and that was considered hate speech. She was removed from the Baltimore Mayor's Commission, LGBTQ Commission. This is, you're in the line of fire regardless of who you are. I don't care who you are. This is why this election cycle is going to play out exactly that way. This is why, well, Beto's been on the apology tour since the day he announced.
We have Democrats talking about bringing a nation together. How do you bring a nation together?
They can't bring their party together.
When you have a party that doesn't care about truth, doesn't even care to understand the history of the society that we live in, constantly pervert the history of our society and what the law actually means and what our society is about, and rely and have their life dictated by envy and jealousy. How are the people that truly believe in the Constitution, where is the compromise that we're supposed to make? How do you bring those two factions together? I've got a question. I don't have the answer. I don't know.
I don't think it's possible.
I don't know, because we're to the point where these people know they are willfully ignorant, and they're okay with it. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Just think, Eric, about the failure of our educational institutions, that people walk around having no idea how the country is run, the society that they live in, that we're not teaching our children about it. We may be teaching them. We're not teaching them effectively, because this is something that they didn't teach me this in college. Everything that I talk about now is what I learned in junior high, and probably by the time I got to 10th grade, had a full understanding, and also being in Boy Scouts, had a full understanding of why we live in this republic, what it's about, the thought process and the mindset of the founding fathers behind it, and how it all worked. And I fully understood it by the time that I was 13, 14 years of age, and never forgot it.
Well, because we as people are naturally curious. But if you're not curious as to the basics, think about that. I mean, even without a formal higher education, you can be curious. There are many brilliant people out there who have no formal higher education, but they have that curiosity that led them to find the facts, find that information. And today, we have a wealth of information literally at our fingertips on our smartphone. Do we use it? No.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.